They got the Monkees. Mm-hmm. They were a major influence on the Beatles.
Yeah, I know.
Excuse me, Flo.
Flo liked the TV show. What is the soup du jour?
It's the soup of the day.
Mm-hmm. That sounds good. I'll have that.
All right, everybody, welcome back to another week of Muskies on Tap. Welcome to episode 79 here on this early November evening. We got the court recording going. I'm one of your hosts tonight, Gus Manti. We're going to be speaking with Kevin Cochran over in the Bemidji area of Minnesota tonight. So after introduce the other hosts on here tonight, we'll fire that interview up. So without further ado, let's introduce my very own brother, Max. Max, how you doing?
Good. No complaints for me tonight. I'm sipping on a Bajas. Bajas.
The hell is that?
Wonder Stuff Pilsner, delicious beer. Yeah, no, doing well. Just had an awesome interview with Kevin. I think you guys are going to enjoy it quite a bit. Was very thankful that he hopped on to chat with us here this evening. But yeah, no, things are good. Back's healing up. Might be able to get out a few more times this year. Musky season's kind of starting to wind down, but hoping to get a few more days in. So we'll see if we can end the season on a good note. It's been a slow fall for yours truly. So maybe the silver lining there is we'll end it on a bang. But you know, that's kind of the deal. So without further ado, I will introduce our third co-host here of the evening, and that is none other than my buddy Brian Eckel. Brian, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing great on the edge of my seat with this election going on. thanks to Kevin for coming on during this pressing time in our country. Had a great chat with him. I mean, he's one of those guys that's been in the Muskie game for you know, a couple decades now, and he's seen a lot change in the lakes and a lot of new technology coming to play. So it's cool. Just, you know, we only got to talk with him for a little over an hour, but filled the same with a bunch of cool knowledge on how the industry's moved since early 2000s. So I'd love to get him back on again and hear more of his stories. He's caught some giant fish, incredible fish stories. But I spent the weekend watching the Buckeyes get back on track.
All right.
Buckeyes number two in the playoff standings. We see the light at the end of the tunnel now. We're coming.
All right, Gus, cue up the interview with Kevin, and we'll catch you guys on the other side.
Yep, can do. All right, everybody, here on the line with us tonight, we got Kevin Cochran out of northern Minnesota here to talk Muskies, get his story, the whole scoop on his area and what's going on. So, Kevin, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Yeah, no problem. Happy you could join us here on this beautiful November evening. I don't know about you, but it was raining all day here. I heard from Max it was raining all day there, and this weather is a little goofy, but maybe before we talk about some fall fishing, because that's probably what some people want to hear about or get the scoop on, let's get your background, and we'll start from there on what got you into musky fishing from the start.
Yeah, so when I was a kid, I lived in Indiana, grew up on a lake, just a big like bass guy when I was in high school. I was fishing all the time. Decided when I graduated high school, I wanted to go someplace with muskies, you know, and I musky fished a little bit before I moved to Minnesota, but I really kind of had a goal, I guess, that I wanted to move in northern Minnesota. So went to school in Bemidji because that was kind of the area that was back then. It was definitely like a sleeper area for big fish. I knew there was big fish up here. Moved up here, went to college. Maybe 4 years into college, I started guiding. This is back in 2005. I started guiding And just kind of never looked back. I started guiding, and I got to experience a lot of these lakes that like Bemidji, Plantagenet, Big Lake, Elk, Mantrap, all these area lakes that weren't really exploited to what they are right now. So essentially I was fishing lakes that had giant fish, like 40 and upper 40, even upper 40-pound fish. And I kind of got my feet wet right away, and I started. And there's one other guide that was established in the area, Brian Truax, and that's it. I mean, him and I guided, and I guess for 20 years now, I've kind of been guiding this area. I'd say a minimum of maybe 130 days a year. So, pretty blessed to live exactly where I'm at and have some of the best, if not the best, musky waters in Minnesota, literally in my backyard. So, I've just been, it's my home. I love it. I've been up here for 25 years now, and it's amazing. I love every minute of it outside of the winters. The winters kind of suck, but June through November is pretty amazing.
Right. And so the muskies in your area, we're still learning a lot about Minnesota, and that's one area that we have not been to, is that Bemidji area. Is that somewhere where a lot of those lakes, when you're fishing them, were they just completely native fisheries, or do they stock them for a long time, like since the 50s, 80s, you know?
Yeah, so I know Mantrap was stocked early, maybe I don't know, maybe 50s or 60s. But the majority of my lakes around the area were stocked in the early 80s, like the 80, 81, 82 era. And so when I first started fishing, I mean, I was playing with like 18 to 20-year-old fish that were like peaked, that were, those mid 50-inch fish, mid to upper 40-pound fish, back in like 2003. So I moved up here over 20 years ago. So I didn't start guiding until 2005. But I was fortunate to have like that stock, that 81, 82 year class that just was maximum potential. They were giants. I got to fish Bemidji and Plantagenet when they were in their prime, and then of course like Cass has always been a pretty good fishery too, and that's natural. And then Leech, of course, is like 30 some miles away too. So we have a really good mix of stocked and natural lakes. Without a doubt, the stocked lakes do produce absolute giants, and they still do. The natural lakes have that like even bell curve of small fish. I mean, I've caught like 35-inch fish on natural lakes, and also like 52-inch fish on natural lakes. The biggest I guess takeaway here is the stock lakes have absolute giants, and the natural lakes have very few really big fish. But I would say natural lakes are definitely healthier lakes, and also the density is more too. So
Yeah, looks like we just lost one of our co-hosts here, but I'm
huh.
sure
He
he'll
said his
find his way
power went
back
out.
on.
Oh, really? Huh.
Election's getting to him. It's getting
Russian
to
must
hackers.
be. It must be.
Got a hacking situation going on. One thing I guess I always like talking with folks who kind of got to experience that heyday, quote unquote, in Minnesota, I guess as you call it. But something I was, kind of piqued my interest when you were talking about that, going to college at Bemidji and starting to explore on all these different bodies of water. Like, were you always in the mindset of just kind of, running and gunning, being a young guy, kind of having that exploratory mindset where you're like, I'm gonna go try different bodies of water, and you'd stumble onto you named a handful of them, and all of a sudden you'd kind of like a kind of find, I guess, your own, little I don't know, honey hole or utopia of musky land. How did that like exploring go back then? Was it through word of mouth? Was it just pure Hunch,
You
how
know,
did you branch out?
obviously there wasn't like that internet presence like there is now. There is message boards. I would say like Muskie First back in the day, it was a pretty significant place that people posted information. And then maybe a little bit here and there on snippets on Facebook, but there at that time there wasn't any groups. So you know, I think like exploring back then, we would just start fishing, and then we would hear, oh, you know, there's muskies in this lake, there's muskies in that lake. And there's some lakes up here that have never been stocked that I know people that have transported fish and put fish in different lakes. I respect that. Like, I respect that outlaw mentality when you're spreading musky genes, actually. You know, like, so we would find stumble upon these other lakes that have muskies that should absolutely never have muskies, but they do because somebody put, you know, 30 fish in them 1 year.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, and those lakes still have muskies, which is awesome. You know, I think just definitely word of mouth, and then going and fishing lakes. I would fish. I was back then. I was fishing lakes that were stocked, you know, a handful of times. We had a couple of lakes that were stocked once in 81, once in 82, and then we would fish those lakes and catch some really big fish, but it's super low density. So back then, I mean, we had tons of options, and you know. And if I would run into other musky guys, it was kind of a rarity. There some you'd see some people from Wisconsin coming over and fishing here and there, but as far as like local pressure, it didn't really exist up until maybe 2010. Then it was pretty significant.
So did you have like a group of buddies that were kind of like your age that you guys got into it together and were all,
Oh yeah,
caught the
yeah.
bug early and
Oh yeah, we're hardcore, you know, like just as hardcore as anybody else is at that early age. And you know, just and I would and I was started to guide too back then. And then I would like fish with my buddies for 5 or 6 hours, and I would go guide for like 12 hours and like that sort of thing. And and back then there was nobody on the lakes, right? So if I say there was like we had a 2,000-acre lake. If there was another boat out there, I'd be pretty surprised. You know, throughout the
Wow.
week. On the weekend, you might get one or two other boats, but just pressure didn't really exist back then.
That's crazy. That sounds
Yeah,
like, it
yeah.
does sound like kind of the golden era in a way. Big fish, low
Nope.
pressure, just
Yeah.
kind of
And then I
exploring.
started, so then Cowgirls came out in 05, and I got my first like fish in 05 on Cowgirls, and then they would inhale the baits so bad that I would have to like pinch all the barbs on that back hook, or I would have to like just cut that back hook off and just use the front hook. You know,
That's
and I
unreal.
remember those days were kind of crazy. And then actually cowgirls were made a little bit longer. I don't know, maybe like 3/4 inch longer. And then before Brad started shortening them up and adding weight and just doing just different things. But yeah, I mean, they were just smashing baits, inhaling baits. And it wasn't, you could go out and get, you know, 2 or 3 50s a night sometimes, some nights. And that's just the way those fish. I mean, if you, and I, and I, and recently I've kind of experienced that too in targeting a lake that was never stocked, that just has giant fish in it, you know, really. Before a lot of people started fishing, and I got to experience that like thrill and that rush of just smashing big fish again. But there wasn't, yeah, like that 2004 to 2006 era was pretty magical.
When you've got that first cowgirl, I've heard other people talk about it, but I don't think I've even asked somebody. I guess what was going through your mind when you saw that first cowgirl, you picked one up, and then like what kind of setup were you
Okay,
using to
so
try to lug
yeah,
that
that's a
thing
good
in?
question. So I had I actually had an 8-foot rod at the time, which was absolutely unheard of. Nobody had 8-footers. People looked at me like, dude, what are you gonna do with that long rod? I'm like, I don't know, but I fished with back in like the early 2000s. I fished with oh gosh, a couple Mille Lacs guides. The name escapes me right now, but out of Eddies. But I fished with him, and he had an 8 foot rod, and I used it. I'm like, this thing is pretty awesome. So I knew an 8 foot rod, like a longer rod, was the way to go. And then back then we used Calcutta TEs, 400 TEs, and I think it was a 5.0 to 1 gear ratio. So you could crank in cowgirls like decently, but at the same time, you would definitely feel it, right? Like, so like the gear and everything that you use. I think back then I used like tough line, some kind of tough line garbage re or line, and just a regular 174 pound steel leader. And you would feel it. You would feel reeling in a cowgirl, and it sucked. It was horrible.
I can
So,
just only imagine like
yeah.
freaking reels and
Yeah.
stuff combusting. 'Cause like, I mean, I remember even Gus, like when we started throwing rubber and we didn't have the right setups, that like first day you're throwing a Medusa and then like 5, 6 hours in the day, your rod just snapped in half.
Yeah, oh
Yeah, I was
yeah.
just taking a cast with it and it just snapped. I'm like, all right, jeez. It's like an
Mm
8 foot heavy, but it was junk. It was
hmm.
junk. And one thing I was gonna say, I can't remember who we chatted about this with, but I heard like back in the day somebody was saying like, yeah, we would burn, cowgirls, and then they stopped for a second and they're like, well, with the setups we had, burning back then is probably medium pace nowadays with the reels we have,
Oh
looking
yeah.
back.
Yeah, and guys were using 6500 C3, like Abu Garcia is just, there's garbage, like it's nothing that nobody would ever use right now.
We're
So we
so
would use,
pampered.
yeah, we would use like, and I remember buying like an Ultra Cast, a 6500 Ultra Cast, because it had an extra ball bearing. It's supposed to be smoother, but you wouldn't notice that at all. And you were like reeling like this, and just couldn't reel. Because of everything, the handle was, and you would hit your knuckles, and yeah, it was horrible. So, we started using some saltwater stuff. I kind of got into, like, there's a company on the West Coast in California called Abbott, I think ABET. I started using their saltwater reels, and that's really the only reels that would hold up. A lot of like guys would use Trinidads too, Shimano Trinidads. You guys heard of those?
I don't think
So,
so.
okay.
I have
But
not,
they're like
no.
Trinidad 16s, narrow spools. It was just a big saltwater reel, and they didn't have level lines. So then we would just manipulate the level line with our fingers. And you didn't even really have to do much of that, because the line would lay so nice and neat if it was like a straight pulling bait, like a bucktail. Yeah.
What do you
So I
got
mean, we
there,
just didn't have
Gus?
any options. 20 years ago, you had no options.
Right.
There was some Abu Garcia big games. They might have been like a 4.6 to 1 or something. And those were straight trash. But the saltwater reels was the way to go.
What did your bait progression look like? I mean, you got up there kind of in the heyday. They were just inhaling cowgirls. I mean, what was like the next couple baits to really take off?
There was a run of like pacemaker fish. The weagle, you guys ever heard of like weagles and stuff? Weagles, yeah,
We would use them.
that was up there. That was pretty big back in the day. That was where like Steve Cady got his start, I guess, in some of those bigger lakes. And like I smashed a lot of fish. Like at one time, I had more fish over 54 on rabid squirrels than any other bait. So rabid squirrels, like back in the day, they're a lot different now. They're nothing like how they are right now. So they were a lot different. But
Like bigger
yeah,
body, or what do they look like?
smaller body, and then
Oh.
the rear hook was actually like looped into the bait itself, no split ring, so it wasn't shrink tubed. And then also, I think the top hook now is shrink or is split ringed. It wasn't split ringed. It was the eye of the hook was bent, and then it and then I think like the blade is even different, the weight is different. There's a lot of things different that made like the original rabid squirrels catch a lot of fish, in my opinion. I would smash down the blades, I would take like the curve out of the blades, and we just burn them in, and they would rattle super hard, and caught a ton of really big fish on them. It's really super small bait too. So blades, yeah, like bucktails back in the day were Yeah, amazing.
When
So,
did you find like a need to start getting into rubber or hard baits? I mean, once the
you
pressure started
know,
ramping up.
yeah, that and maybe also like fall fishing too. I didn't really have a lot of good options. And I would say, like, honestly, our lakes, like the trolling bite was really trash starting maybe in 2014, 15, like 10 years ago. The trolling bite just took a steady decline because, like, back in the day, I used to troll open water. I'd write a lot of seminars and articles from Muskie Hunter about open water fishing. And I'm like, can't believe nobody's out here doing it. Like, I was smashing fish all of June, all of July, like trolling open water. I troll a lot of like 14-inch jakes at the time, 13-inch grandmas, slammers, and all sorts of stuff. But, you know, and then I would troll like bucktails with 8 ounces of weight off of boards. And I was doing a lot of really crazy stuff. And I even have a mast system and you know, just using a mast, and I just couldn't believe people weren't doing that. And then I started talking about it, and other people did too, not just me. But then, you know, word got out, and then you know, then the trolling bite was like pretty insane there for maybe 8 years. And then it just crashed. So that along with like I started using a lot of rubber casting, finding fish on SI, casting at them with rubber. And that's always like a really, and it still is this day. It's a great option for the fall. Pounders. I was huge in the pounders for many years. So,
Do you still do a trolling program in the fall when fish? No, not
Well,
really.
I haven't caught a fish in 2 years trolling. So,
Man, that's
yeah, I got
crazy.
a bunch of crazy trolling baits like Canadian Hose Daddies used to be my favorite. Like BK baits, our guy got tons and tons of trolling stuff. But
What's a Canadian
last
hose
year,
daddy? I've heard of them. I don't own
have you?
one.
Hose Daddies, gosh,
Look it
yeah.
up.
Might
They're
have to look it
pretty
up really quick.
pricey.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, they are. I've caught tons and tons and tons of fish on them, and I haven't trolled. I don't think I trolled yet this year, and I did. I
Don't
think I
Google
trolled.
house daddy.
Yeah, I wouldn't. Just don't Google Hose Daddy. Yeah,
Jeez.
the cops at your door.
Oh, Christ. Yeah, I'll find that one later.
Yeah.
Yeah, Hose Baits. Hose Baits.
Okay, hose baits,
A
yeah.
H O S E. Yeah,
Okay.
not HOES. A little bit
Just
different. Hose.
a
So,
bunch of shirtless dudes with hoses.
yeah, you might get that. So, you
Anyways.
know, I think like, yeah, like the fall fishing and the rubber deal is definitely a casting bite without a doubt. I used to troll when it was too cold to cast. But I think, you know, with kind of going off topic, but like with the progression of technology, right? Like SI and live imaging, forward facing sonar, like all that stuff is. It doesn't really lend itself to trolling. So, right,
Yeah.
when you know the fish's location, why would you troll a bait by it? Why wouldn't you just cast a bait at it?
True.
Makes sense to me.
Yeah.
Real quick, I want to not to we'll get back on to musky fishing, but before I forget, I'm looking at your hat right now, and I wanted to ask you about this. So what is the deal with is it Headwaters Bait Company
Hat company. So
or Hack? Yeah, Headwaters Hack Company.
it's
Sorry,
a company that I started.
I'm talking about hose daddies and.
would have been last year. I started a hat company last year. I wanted to target anglers, you know, and just kind of do something like off the cuff, right? So I've got like on this hat right here, I've got a gunfighter sitting on top of a largemouth bass, right? So it's just something crazy different. I've got like eelpout hats. I've got musky hats, king salmon hats. I'm gonna expand that line too on just different fish species. But I just wanted something different that's out there that people just aren't really exposed to, right? So, you know, I see a lot of like cool hunting gear, and I just don't see, I don't see that maybe crossover into like the fishing side. I see a lot of hats out there aimed at like musky anglers with like really like the designs just look like trash.
Super
So I just
gaudy
wanted to bring,
stuff.
yeah, super gaudy, and it just it's not they're not really made by anglers, so they don't really know what to look for when you're putting stuff together, and just wanted to bring that to market. And I think like the first year I dumped a ton of money into it, and we did okay, but I'm definitely still in the hole when you're buying 100 hats of this, 100 of that, and you're gonna be upside down for a while in inventory. But regardless, I think it's cool, and I just want to offer something different on the market.
I
I've
was
been eyeing him up. Dude, you probably already know what I'm gonna say real quick. I was eyeing it up. I want to get one, but the problem that Gus and I run into is I'm one of those guys that I gotta try them on before I buy hats because my head's so freaking
Yeah.
big.
Yep.
So it's
I hear
like,
you.
but I will get one in the
Yeah.
future.
Yeah, for sure. Just stop by at the I'm gonna be at the Northwest sports show in Minneapolis, where the big sports show. I think it's in Minneapolis. Maybe it's St. Paul. And I'll of course be at the Muskie show in Minnesota too.
I'll see you there. Sorry,
Perfect.
Brian, I cut
So
you off.
yeah, well, that's kind of a funny transition. I was gonna say I was browsing your Instagram today. I was like, oh, Headwaters Hat Co. Went to your website and actually did buy one. I don't have the big head problem usually, so
Oh
I got the muskie with the guy riding it like a horse. So I love the creative
That's perfect
designs.
one.
Yep. That's a like a stormtrooper type.
Yeah, that's
Yeah,
sweet.
yep, yeah, yep.
Yeah, I gotta
Yeah.
get a
So
beanie though too here, now that it's
I
getting
got some
cold.
beanie. Yeah, beanies are super cool.
Oh
They're
shit, I might go beanie. Beanie would always
actually
work, yeah.
I'm gonna kind of let the cat on the bag right now. So I got a guy that so the guy that my artist, he does a lot of work with like Orbis and like big fly fishing companies, and he's super cool. And he's gonna be doing a muskie, and then President Trump sitting on top of him.
Nice. Let's
So I'm
go.
like,
A good day to drop
and I'm
it.
thinking like
Hopefully
he's
it
that
ages well.
yeah. I'm getting him all the images now, but I'm thinking he's gonna be like fist pumping in the air.
Oh yeah,
And
that's the best one.
it should sell. It should sell.
I
Yeah.
think
So,
so. Yeah.
right.
That's
So
unreal. No, cool.
awesome.
I just wanted to ask about it before I forgot because I've
Yeah.
been on Instagram and Facebook and stuff and really cool design. So
Cool. Yeah, I've got an awesome artist that's he's been awesome. He's been really helpful, and he has a really quick turnaround time. And yeah, so he's experienced and pretty fortunate to have him, at my
awesome.
ready whenever I come up with something. So
That's awesome.
yeah.
Yeah. I'm digging. I just like the all the natural colors, you know. Always looks good.
I
Look
like
good.
old school camo, like old school like duck camo, like the 70s and the 80s stuff.
For sure.
Like that's pretty cool. Yeah. And
Yep, I wear a bunch of
I
camo.
look at like the hunting side, man. They got like so much cool gear. I'm into gear too. I really like gear. So the hunting, the hunting side of things, they have like all crazy hunting jackets and hats, and they're definitely other ducks in a row, and seems like a lot of especially like the waterfowl guys. That's where I get a lot of ideas from. The waterfowl guys
For
definitely got their act
sure.
together.
Yeah, the fishing industry feels like it's a little bit lagged on some of the apparel side of things, like design wise. You see a
Yeah,
lot
and
of the same stuff, you know.
I think they're like targeting a lot of companies are targeting like that, like the older men that are, I don't know, maybe in their 50s and 60s, and just that they're not targeting that younger generation. So
Right. There's not that much unique stuff. I mean, like you go to these tournaments and it's like you see seven people wearing the same two-tone Sims, hoodie. And I'm like, well, shit, I thought that was cool, but now I see eight other guys here have that. So kind of takes it away for a
Exactly.
little bit, but
Yeah.
yeah. All right, back to fishing, muskie fishing, more specifically. What something I kind of wanted to talk to you about here. Because we've been, we've gotten to know Alex McLean and Tyler Schlabs a little bit here over the course of the year. We've had them on a few times, and they've kind of talked to us a little bit about the area that you fish, in, and you clearly have been doing it for a long time. I mean, Is the area now, I mean, obviously you're still running a successful guide business. Has it just changed a lot? Do you see a path forward up there? I really hear mostly a little bit of doom and gloom,
Yeah,
but I've
so
never
yeah.
fished it, so it's hard for me to know
Right.
really.
So I think when they're specifically talking like the stock lakes just get absolutely hammered. Without a doubt, there's a lot of pressure, very narrow bite windows, but also really large fish, right? So some of the lakes, if you fish like 3 or 4 days, you might get one bite or two bites. So I can't really run a successful guide business off of a handful of bites, especially from unseasoned anglers. I fish a lot of the natural lakes. Natural lakes are still good. They don't put out the really super big fish, like leech and cast. They don't really put out giant fish. But when I can go there and get numbers of fish and do pretty good, I'm happy with that, right? So I definitely pick my times when I fish stock lakes. If it's getting a lot of pressure, I tend to shy away from those lakes. However, our stock lakes do have, they legit, like I've held 50-pound fish in our stock lakes before. I do want to point out, I didn't catch a 50-pound fish, but I've held them in DNR nets and like sampling, right? And I don't know if I've ever caught one that big. But we do have potential to put out a lot of like 40 to 47 pound fish. So the stock lakes, they do get tons of pressure. They do still spit out big fish. The guys that are catching them are like Alex and Tyler when he comes over. They're experienced. They're just like killers, right? So they know exactly what to do, what to throw, and how to do it, and what time to fish. So I think extremely experienced anglers can have success. Weekend warriors are probably going to get their butts kicked. Yeah.
Yeah. What's one thing I really do want to ask your opinion on up there for your stocked versus natural, because we got a couple over here that they don't stock and are natural, and then of course there's a lot of stocking that they put into in northern Wisconsin. But do you see a difference in fish behaviors, baits, anything?
And I've talked about it before, like natural fish, I don't do well night fishing natural lakes ever. So once you get like 45 minutes, half an hour past sunset, it's done. Like I can't catch natural fish. It's really tough for me to do. However, in contrary, like stock fish, they bite like all night long. And that's kind of when typically that's when you get your biggest fish on stock lakes. So that's one, definitely one thing. And honestly, like figure eights, I have a really hard time getting natural fish to bite in figure eight, regardless of pressure. Even if it's like very minimal pressure, I have a hard time getting them to bite in figure eight. So that's one thing. The stock fish are very boat shy too. It seems like if they do get more pressure, they're definitely without a doubt extremely boat shy. And then also maybe they move off of spots quicker. The more pressure that they get on the stock lakes, I think that they come up and on spots, and then they're off of spots quicker just because there is that angling pressure. If you're looking at like physical characteristics, I see natural fish that get like ailments, right? It's gonna sound weird, but they get like cataracts in the eyes. They just don't like physically have what it takes to grow super big, like the stock fish. So if I see like a 14-year-old fish, so we did some age sampling a long time ago. 14-year-old fish on like Cass Lake was 52 inches, definitely maxed out. Like not that fish was that we sampled, we caught it 100%, like towards the end of its life, had cataracts in its eyes, and it was skinny, big head, smaller body. in comparison to like a Bemidji 14-year-old fish. It was 54 and a half, and I think we caught that one. I don't know. It had to have been like a 43 or 44 pounder. So it was super solid and a lot of room to grow. The stock fish, in my opinion, do get older as well. So I think there's a lot of differences, and there also is in how I angle for those fish too. I think my natural fish and just like the time, the presentations are pretty similar, but just the timing aspect is different. You know, I do really well and I schedule a lot of my trips from like 5 a.m. until like 2 p.m., something like that. So if I was fishing at Stock Lakes, I would not even start fishing until like 4 p.m. and go until 1 morning, something like that. Interesting.
We talked about it a little bit earlier on. I mean, maybe it was before we hit record, but I mean, it sounded like everyone, at least in the last couple of years, is starting to struggle sucker fishing wise. And the same topic with stock fish or natural fish. Do you notice a tendency for them to eat the sucker more often, one or the other?
So only so I think like I look at forage base. So one of the lakes, couple of lakes that I fish, one is natural and one is stocked. The stock lakes forage base is like panfish, sucker, and there's no tilapia in it. And in comparison to the natural lake that I fish, that has a very similar forage base, and they're both really, really good sucker lakes. So I think that that's kind of where I target. I've targeted like the big lakes, like Plantagenet. It's not that big, but Planet, Bemidji, and Cass with suckers. And really, I have got some fish to bite, but it's super, super, super tough. So I think forage base has like a plays a key role in what that sucker bite is like. This year it was really, really trash because of the water temps. You know, I was gonna film. We did pretty good last year when I filmed with End Fisherman for a couple of days on a stock lake, and we got like a 51 and a half. But I mean, the temps were, I don't know, 43 degrees, and right now it's, you know, what is it, November 5th today, and the water temp is 48. You know, and so it's a huge difference. And when I filmed with Infish last year, it was like October 20th. You know, so we're definitely 3 weeks behind where we usually are. The sucker bite for us has been really, really bad, but I think the weather has a key role to play in that.
Yeah, makes sense. I'm always curious, like with Minnesota fishing, because I think you hear a lot of it, you know, in the northern Wisconsin world, like the late fall is kind of the you know, God time to be up there. Everyone gets all excited. And we've kind of joked about it where we've actually kind of started to go the other way on fall because we're like, God, it's freaking cold weather, tight bite windows. Like this kind of stinks, you know. Like at times, you know, you just be out there and it's like, you know, Gus was saying before you hit record, it's like you're seeing all these fish on your electronics. You just can't get any of them to eat no matter what you do. Minnesota late fall. I mean, is it the same where you're kind of targeting those big blimped out fish late fall? Are they still hitting artificial baits until ice up there? I mean, what's kind of the late fall program in Minnesota?
So the late fall, in my opinion, where I'm fishing, it's fish are really transient. So they go to where the tulip spawning grounds are. So if you know where those areas are, then you want to follow the fish to get there, and they'll be off that area. And sometimes like they'll pile in like small pods. Well, not small, but they'll pile in these small areas, and there'll be tons and tons of fish. For example, I think like last weekend, like Saturday, we casted it like over 80 fish, and we got 4 to bite. And then Sunday, I think we casted like 65, and we got a couple to bite. But you know, we're seeing them and a lot of fish, and getting them to bite is always kind of a challenge. But definitely short bite windows, and There's always, it seems like regardless of stock lake or natural lake, there's always a bite window right at sunset to maybe like 15 minutes after. That's kind of definitely, in my opinion, that's when you want to be out there. So if you can at least hit that bite window, you're gonna get a shot of the fish. So yeah, the fall is, I mean, kind of also depends on like on lakes with population, like low density populations. Obviously, like Mille Lacs, super tough, right? So back in the day, Hamernik would get sometimes like five fish in November, and that's before like live scopes and all that. So November traditionally has been a pretty tough month in Minnesota. So
Five fish in a month. That's dedication.
it's a
but
lot of
those
time in the
five, I
water.
mean, he's
Yeah.
gonna get like 250 pounders, right?
Right.
So
100%.
yeah.
That's incredible. Have you seen at all majors and minors play a factor? Because it sometimes does here, and I thought with the all day rain, it was totally going to be on moon, and the one fish we got today was no moon at all.
No moon,
Just
yeah.
nothing. Right in the middle of the day, like 1 p.m., 12:30, or
Yeah,
yeah, 1 p.m.
honestly, I used to pay like really super close attention to that, but I kind of like honestly like my electronics throw a lot of stuff out the window that I used to like focus on, right? I just go around, I just find fish. I just drive miles and miles every day and we locate new fish and we cast at them, and if they don't bite, they don't bite, and we move on. And I mean, I was even doing this like with SI, with side imaging. I would run spots and find fish. So this isn't just like a live imagery or forward facing sonar deal. I was kind of like shooting fish like that way back in the day, like 8 years ago. It's just a lot of running and gunning and just trying to find new fish all the time. In my opinion, honestly, I don't put a lot of emphasis anymore onto minors or majors, and just try to find fish.
Do you ever miss at all the pre-technology fishing days when you used to do it compared to
Yeah.
what you kind of do now?
Yeah. So I do the grind and just how everything was like pre SI. I miss it. So I had like LCX 110s, like old school Lowrance, and then we had 10-inch screens back in the day, and that was like big ball and stuff back then, because like you have 10-inch screen and it was huge, and like I had like two 10-inch screens, one for mapping, one for my sonar, and like I thought that was just awesome, right?
Yeah.
I do miss it because it was a grind. And many times you earn every fish that you contacted. I mean, sometimes you would go 10 hours and get one follow, and then you would get that bite, and that bite would be like a 52 or 53 incher. And that would make it all worth it compared to where it is now, to where you're locating fish, and then you're just constantly like locating fish over and over and over and over again, with minimal physical effort, right? So I do miss that. Yeah. I miss definitely miss those days. Because the grind was just that. It was a grind. And now it's not necessarily a grind anymore.
Yeah. I mean, it's a whole different world we're living in now. I mean, it's something obviously, you've embraced and adapted with. Like you're a guide. You got to put people on fish. That's what you get paid to do. So it's different. I mean, if you just went out, I don't know how much time you get to yourself to fish for fun. But if you're going out there and fishing for fun, are you kind of running the same program, or do you kind of ditch it and try something else, or
Yeah, so that's a great question. So it kind of depends where the fish are located, right? So if they're in super shallow water, which I definitely enjoy a lot. I love it when they're in the reeds and the shallow sand and shallow rocks. Then we're just pounding water all day long, beating it with a lot of times with small blades. I definitely I love it. You know, I'll do that all day long too. So that's kind of how, when I started fishing, all my lakes back in the day, it's what we did in September. And when you have those fish super shallow, in my opinion, they're hard to locate. Even on some SI units, they're hard to locate in 4 feet of water, you know. So all of September, you know, we're beating it. I'm making guys work. I'm fishing myself that way too. So yeah. My body doesn't really care for that, but I mean, I'm throwing little bucktails and some topwater baits. I can do that all day long.
Sure.
So
Back when you started out in Bemidji, I know like we kind of hear about it all the time how Minnesota has fairly distinct seasons, especially earlier in the year with like a shallow sand bite, bull rush bite, or like all the fish are now in the open water in the summer. Was that necessarily like as exaggerated back when there wasn't as much pressure, were the fish still relating more so to like normal structure, or was this open water thing more recent?
No, you know, so I watched some guys maybe, I think, 02 catch some big fish trolling open water on Plantagenet. And I'm like, man, like, I gotta figure this out. So then I started, I guess, trolling, and I had some guys, I had some of my clients around that same time period. They were from out east, so they trolled a lot on like St. Lawrence Seaway. And then even like Georgian Bay, and they traveled a lot, and they were like incredible trollers. So they kind of showed me the ropes. They showed me how to modify boards. They showed me how what to do with board rods and how to stagger rods and all that. And I mean, in June every year, they're out over open water, and I think that's just where they go after the spawn. So it's not. You know, most of the time what I see is I see that's where they're at after the spawn, and it's not necessarily due to pressure putting them out there. And man, I don't really think that pressure actually, from what I've seen, displaces fish as much as people think. So I do think like you can definitely run fish off of weed beds in specific areas if you're on it for 8 or 10 hours. However, they may go like parallel to the weed beds, just off the break, that sort of thing. But I don't think that like that pressure will push them out to that open water, and they'll just stay out there. You know, I think there's always fish in open water, and they're out there because they're eating tules and perch and other stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Kind of going back with the electronics thing, it is as it continues to progress and kind of get better and better, do you think, every year when they come out with a new thing, do you think you'll just continue to adapt with whatever they come out with? Or do you think it'll ever get to a point where, if there is a line, would it cross the line? I mean, is there a
Yeah.
system or a unit they could come out with that you're just like, eh? I don't know if that seems good, but I've always kind of
No,
wondered that. I've always kind of wondered
yeah.
that.
So, and I don't know where it's going to go. I don't know if, okay, well, if, you know, I don't know what's going to be considered. It's just going to be like such a big variable in between opinions, right? Like what I think is good, maybe other people think is bad. Like I know I've got a lot going on in my boat. I got a lot of stuff going on, and with forward facing sonar and different units and how I run everything, but I'm sure like people would really like say that that is super unethical. And maybe some people won't, I don't know, you know, but there's some people that think that just forward facing sonar itself is like the worst thing in the world. And I think like a lot has to boil down to how people are using it. I'm going to pass on every fish that's under a certain depth. I'm not going to target fish that usually like the majority of my fish I see are in the top 15 feet of the water column. Anyways, if there's like fish that are down 20, I don't like to cast at them. I don't like them to go there. You know, I do think the ethics comes into play. I don't know specifically what that looks like going over the top. I don't know what that looks like. So
I don't either. I was just,
yeah,
I don't know.
yeah. So, would something that sees out like 300 feet, would that be over the edge or over the top, you know? And then you could get like four of them and see like 600 feet total. I don't know, you know. I
Yeah,
just
I don't
don't
know if
know.
it'll ever get to that point or where it's going next. I think that's,
Yeah.
for me, that's the thing that I definitely give some thought to. I think it's been, yeah, I mean, I guess I'll be kind of, I'm gonna pick my words carefully. It's been somewhat adopted, I would say, with what we have now, to the point where depending on what systems you fish and where you're at, between Wisconsin, Minnesota, I mean, there's somebody's water. It just simply is, what you kind of, it's a very useful tool, I guess. I think for me, I just always kind of ponder it, like where will the technology go? Like how does it get better? Because these companies, they're gonna always want to come out with something new, something different. So I've always kind of just been wondering, like, where do we really go from here on that front? But we don't need to labor on about it. I'm just, something I guess I've been giving a little bit of thought to as of late.
Yeah, and also, like, is legislation going to step in and say, okay, well, this is okay. You can have one transducer in your boat. You can't have four. You know, I don't know. I have no idea what they're going to put out there, or if they're even going to look at something like that. Obviously, it can be done on a specific like a tournament basis, to where the tournaments can decide the rules that they want, right? So I know, like, was it BASS has like their tournaments. They have so many, you can have so many inches of screen in a boat, and then so many transducers. And if you like, you can't have more than these screens. And these guys were having like, they had a couple MBT battleships. They're 22 inches a piece. You know, I don't know if it's like a 52 inch screen maximum. I don't know what they're
Tough for
running,
you.
but yeah, it's pretty crazy.
Is nuts.
Yeah. So I guess we'll have to see, and then also look at what kind of shape the fisheries are going to be in 5 years from now. And if there's, you know, they're seeing a lot of like just a serious decrease in just fish populations, then something's got to be done, right?
Yeah,
I would
I mean,
assume,
this.
yeah.
I hope so. I
Right.
mean, I would say, just from spending a good bit of time learning the metro, I've actually been impressed with how many fish there are in Lake Minnetonka. And we went up to Vermilion last year for the PMTT, Gus and I did, and a lot of what we heard before that tournament was shit. A lot of people were saying, oh, it's terrible and it's nothing like it used to be. And we went up there and we had a freaking blast. It was like it was heaven on earth for us. We're like, I mean, this is some of the coolest fishing we've ever done before. We're seeing fish that are 48 inches and up. Like, we don't get this back home in northern Wisconsin. Like, this is freaking awesome. So it feels like a little bit, it's all relative, right? Like, it's hard to take everybody's word as gospel when you come to this stuff. 'Cause like, before I ever fished Tonka, I heard it was terrible. Don't go out there. It's not worth your time. And every time I've been out there, it's like, man, this is actually pretty fun. Like, as long as you're not here on a Saturday morning, afternoon, when it's 75 and sunny, like we're contacting really nice fish every time we're out there. And I've enjoyed it. And it seems like they've done a pretty good job with stocking some of these metro waters. So, I mean,
I
obviously we
think
can
there's a
always.
lot of fish. Yeah, I think there's a lot of fish in some of the metro lakes. Up by us, definitely, like the stock lakes are most of them are lower density than what the city lakes are.
What are they stocking up there? Like one per 4 acres?
Yeah, so
Five?
Bemidji's at like one for four. I think the entire that chain is, gosh, I don't know if they're thinking that there's like 380 to 475 for fish, maybe. So in that entire chain, roughly maybe 7,500 acres or 8,000 acres. So not a lot of fish. There's some big fish for sure, but you just don't have like, and like the biggest thing that I have a beef with is when they stock these lakes, they're not stocking them to where they would be if they had naturally occurring muskies in them. It's way, way less, right? So, and then they said, well, you know, musky guys want to catch the biggest fish. If we stock super low density, then yeah, for sure. But at the same time, like there has to be some kind of a payoff, right? Like you have to have a legit chance at contacting a fish if you put 10 hours in. So, yeah, some of the stock lakes just don't.
I'd say overall, majority of people out there probably just want to contact fish and catch fish. Of course, there's
Yeah,
bunch of
sure.
us that want big ones, but majority want the numbers, you know.
Or at least like a chance to get maybe two bites in a day or who knows, right? Yeah. So I think Minnesota does have a ways to go in their stocking program. They also have to like expand. We have to expand the Muskies range through stocking. That's a big issue too, where, you know, the long range plan was for up 2020. We were supposed to get all these lakes, like 90 lakes or something, and that never happened. So, you know, we need to meet the expectations of the muskie angler. And then also, I mean, how can we grow that sport
Growing the number
you
of
know, without
fish.
doing that without fish, right? We need fish. We need muskies.
Seems to be an
So
important piece of the puzzle. And I mean,
we
with
do.
Minnesota, your lakes are so much bigger than ours are typically here in Wisconsin. If you guys were able to expand, 9 to 10 more lakes, I mean, that's
Oh
got to
yeah.
be a huge deal to disperse a lot of that pressure off what you
Definitely.
guys currently have. And,
Definitely. Yeah.
so you've been guiding for a really long time. Do you have, I don't mean to age you or anything, but
Yeah.
do you have any kind of stories that come to mind with, like, I guess either maybe just crazy days or when you're getting into guiding, like in your real early days, like maybe just trying to figure it out, like, holy, this is kind of a shit show, or just kind of early on stuff where like you're just kind of figuring it all out as a younger guide.
So it was my first year, and I went to Reed's and Walker, and I spent some money on Abu Garcia. I think it was like right around the I had a, maybe a couple cow I think I had maybe three cowgirls. Carrie gave them to me for like $14 a piece, which I thought was a pretty good deal back then, because they were selling for like $20 or I don't know. Well, anyways, you know, she mailed me some, and like I was just destroying reels. And I was a college kid destroying reels left and right. Like I didn't have any reels left. And I remember, I had a friend, and I think I had two reels in my boat that worked. And they were I bought them at, and like I said, I bought them at Reed's, and they were like the gold HS and Abu Garcia 7000s. They were just straight trash. They were made in China, but they looked like physically they looked like they would work, but they don't. Every one of them broke. And I had like two of them, and I was using them, and I think one broke. And I was guiding, so I had two people casting, and only one of them had a reel. And so I called my buddy. I'm like, hey man, dude, I just broke all the reels in my boat. So I have no more reels left. I said, can I come to your house and borrow some? He lived on Plantagenet. And so I motored over to his house, and I got out, and I came back. He let me borrow two reels, and I came back and I used the reels. But like people had to have been thinking, like, what is this kid doing? Like, what a loser. Doesn't he have reels for us to use? You know, so I had to use like reels. And but I mean, there were times like that where, but I mean, we were busting like stuff like left and right, just because everything that we were using wasn't made to do what we were doing with it, right? So yeah, that was kind of a crazy time, just breaking everything. And you know, I've got a lot of like big fish stories, and you know, like some numbers that we used to put up back in the day. And kind of a crazy story that I had. I actually it just popped up on my feed in Facebook, because like I've had Facebook for like 20 years, right? So something popped up like 15 years ago or something. It said, you know, this is your memories on this day. Well, it was actually today. And so I was fresh in my memory. And I was sucker fishing on a stock lake, and my client set the hook into like a pretty good sized fish. And then he's a farmer from a bee farmer from North Dakota, super big dude. And I don't know, maybe like 6'3", like 260s, pretty strong, right? So he's like reeling this fish in and this muskie in. It's obviously big. And then he just can't reel it. I'm looking at it. And then back then I think I had like a 9 foot rod, super stiff 9 foot, but like St. Croix double X heavy.
All right, so I'm back, and it looks like my laptop is just frozen. I don't know.
Oh yeah, that
Oh,
was
there
weird.
we go. All right, so get back to this right here.
9 foot extra heavy rod doubled over.
Yeah, okay. So he's got this super like there's a really double X heavy 9 foot rod. I mean, I think I had it custom made, and I think like the guy that made it, Keith Thurlinden, had like a he had like a bowling ball or something he attached it to, and so it's sports shows, so he could show people that he could like pick up a bowling ball with it. It's really crazy. And so I thought that was kind of, so I'm like, yeah, that's gonna be my sucker rod. I didn't know any better. And so this big dude set the hook into a fish. I knew it was a big fish, couldn't move it. I thought he got stuck on like a log or bottom or something. And it was come to find out, like it was a 45-inch fish, and a bigger fish, like a real big fish, grabbed that fish and T-boned it.
What?
And smashed it. Smashed it. So he had like the back of that 45-incher was like in the back of his jaws, right? So then like I think that's how it went. So then like the bite radius was all over, was from the top of the 45-incher's back to like the bottom of the 45-incher's, like the stomach. And it was gigantic. Never saw the fish. I don't know how big it was, but it was without a doubt, I don't know, it could have been something stupid big. But I still have like the pictures, and I
Jesus.
my daughter right there. I saw the pictures of it, the bite marks, and everything. It was just such a crazy deal. And yeah, that's definitely a memorable moment.
That's
What
wild.
was the size of that jaw? I mean, how far around did it get on a
I'll show
45?
you. I'll actually find pictures and I'll send them to you, but crazy
That'd be
big.
great.
Yeah,
Yeah.
crazy big. Yeah, it's
Was
on
it?
my Instagram story, and then it's also it popped, like I said, it popped up today as memories. So
Unreal. Has there
yeah.
ever been like a 60-incher in your area caught that you know of? Or is that an unreal?
Yeah, so like Cass Lake back in the day, like spit out some fish that were pretty big, like maybe 58.5s or 59s. And maybe like I remember one caught in 2003. So sometimes those natural lakes push out real big fish. It's super weird because the majority of fish in that lake are like 42 to 47s, but every now and then, I'm talking extremely rare. Like I've never caught anything super big out there, but natural lakes every now and then push out something super big, like that upper 50s mark. And I know leeches have done the same over the years too. Yeah. But yeah, there's definitely there's that those anomalies out there that the half of a percent that just get real big. Yeah, so there's probably stock lakes, of course, like 55s, 56s are not uncommon. Yeah. I mean, we caught a 55 on Sunday. So
Not bad.
it's
Light
Minnesota.
work, light
Yes.
work.
Yeah. Yeah. I would say that's, it's Minnesota for you, and pretty fortunate to be where I'm at. So,
Sure. Yeah.
yeah.
I'd say so.
And Alex, the same day, Alex put a 54.5 in the boat too. So,
Yeah, he knows
jeez.
how to catch fish.
Oh yeah.
Well, it looks like movie time is done over at the
Movie
household,
time.
so
Yeah. Secret Life of Pets is done for sure. Yeah.
okay. How was it? How was the movie?
Was the movie good? You can talk. Beja, you can talk. She's pretty shy for the
Still
most part.
thinking about the movie.
Yeah.
It must have been really good.
Yeah, good
Yeah,
plot.
right. Right. So,
Awesome. Well, we can't thank you enough for coming on here tonight. We really appreciate you giving us your time. We'll have to have you back on, sometime in the future and hear some more of these stories and do a little bit more Minnesota talk and definitely picking up one of those hats at the show. And I'm hopefully I'll see Brian here in a couple of weeks and I can
Awesome.
try one on. And if it fits my big cranium, I'll buy one.
Yeah, absolutely. And that is kind of an issue sometimes. But like beanies are always a safe bet, right? Like they'll fit. They fit a fire hydrant. So I mean, pretty much good
That's
there.
small for Max.
Yeah.
Right, relax, relax.
Oh
Yeah.
my God.
Yeah.
Yes. Thank you so much, Kevin.
Yeah, you bet you guys.
Drop your info real quick where people can
Okay.
find you.
Yeah, so kevincochranguide.com, on the internet. Instagram is Kevin Cochran Guide, and I'm on Facebook as well. My phone number is 507-456-9023. What else? Yeah, so I sell hats too, Headwaters Hat Company. That's on Instagram as well, and it can be found on. I've got an online shop too. So
Sweet. Appreciate your time.
awesome.
Thanks, Kevin.
Awesome, guys. Thanks. Thank you so much for having me on.
Yeah,
No
no
problem.
problem.
Have a
Yep.
good
See ya.
night. You too.
See ya.
Later.
All right. We can't thank Kevin enough for his time tonight to chat Muskies, get his story, and chat all about Minnesota. That was an awesome talk. Definitely we'll be getting him on again. We barely even brushed the surface of some of the topics that we really got into. I mean, we didn't even talk about too much of the baits and stuff going on right now. I know definitely next time I'd like to ask him about some bait mods, but ran out of time, and we'll save it for next time. Currently checking out his website, Headwaters Hat Co. About to toss in a trucker and a beanie, and sweet, sweet hats, sweet logos. Definitely go and check that out. So shout out.
Gus, you wanna toss in a beanie for your boy over here, and I'll just shoot you a quick Venmo. All
Can do. Yeah.
right.
Yeah, I'll do that. Just let me know which one.
No, I really like that conversation with Kevin. That is a good point, Gus. We left a lot on the table, I think, with him. He is,
Yeah.
if you follow him along on social media, he's always kind of concocting some pretty cool bait modifications to some staple baits to get these fish to eat. So, well, yeah, we'll try to get him back on in the future, talk about some of that stuff. But really enjoyed hearing some of his early guiding day stories. Always those giant Minnesota fish stories are fun to listen to. I can never get tired of hearing about that. But
No,
yeah,
not at all.
Brian, what was the takeaway you had from the interview?
Really just hearing about the heyday stuff, like living vicariously through them, through their past, all those Minnesota guys that were fortunate enough to fish it. I can't get the image out of my head of the story he was describing with pulling in a
Right.
45 and another muskie clamping down on it. I don't know how that happens or what a muskie's thinking, but I think he said they didn't actually see it at the boat, like it had let go of it at the time, but I can't
Yeah.
imagine pulling it in, within the visibility line and being like, holy shit.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Today, the one that we boated, Clayton was joking around because it was kind of a beat up fish. It might have been maybe a male. It was a little bit skinny. He's like, oh, it almost looks like somebody tried to, put a sucker harness on this thing and use this as bait. And it was a 40, so that would have been chump change for whatever this fish was that was clamping on to their fish back in the day
Yeah,
in Kevin's
just makes you
story.
realize whatever you're throwing, it is not big
Not big
enough.
enough. Yeah.
Oh
Right.
man. Gus, we got a lot on the plate here this evening with everything going on, but before we head out here tonight, you want to give us a quick update for those that are still on the water and not in a tree stand this time of year. What's been going on out there? What you've been seeing? How have things been?
So we're still seeing an upper 40s water temps. There's a couple skinny water places I was at where
shallower water, stained water, where I was seeing around that like 46 degree mark, but majority of lakes are still, and probably by the time this comes out on Thursday, are still going to be like 47 to 49 even, honestly, in a couple of the really big lakes. That'll be on average, we're still getting some nights in the 30s. Some of the nights are going to be in the 40s coming up. We don't have, I don't think, any more or not too much more rain. We just came off of a 3 days straight of rain, which I really can't complain too much because we needed it pretty bad. We really had a dry late summer, a very dry early fall, a lot of sun, a lot of flat, calm days, and then this fall so far, the wind has finally picked up a lot more mixing. I think the really good news though is that I don't think we have to talk about turnover at all anymore. That's done, completely done as of for sure, anywhere from 1 to 3 weeks ago, depending on the system that you're in, if it does, need to turn over at all. But the bite overall has been decent. I would have liked the sucker bite to be a little bit better. We had a good morning of a couple sucker bites, and after that, a lot of lookers and a lot of some trolling rips and some casting fish. And unfortunately, a few casting fish that are coming unpinned, and it's just kind of the way it is. I found there was a stretch in there where fish were kind of eating weird, I think, because not only were we losing fish on a couple like sucker and casting scenarios, we were losing some fish on trolling lures. So I was just like, all right, well, they're definitely eating these baits weird. I think there was even one night, I was slow. I decided to put one of the baits out on a board, and I kept it really high up, and there I didn't have a video camera rolling. I don't even know if I would have picked it up because the board rod was far away. But I shit you not, I look back and I'm pretty sure a muskie missed the bait and then went half out of the water and then went back down. Like, I heard all this commotion and like saw the tail go away, and there was no rip of the rod. And I was with my dad at the time. I'm like, I think a muskie just missed the lure. Like, these fish. And as I was joking with you guys on that recent watching a muskie miss a sucker, I'm like, apex predator, my ass. That's just not the case. These muskies are doing this on purpose, I swear.
Just messing with you.
Yeah. Could make like a t-shirt out of that with the top of the food chain. Yeah, right. Just a picture of a muskie.
Muskie with like sunglasses on and then a walking cane.
Trying to like help him across the street.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, seriously.
Stupid fish.
Any of the casting action though is pretty much rubber and glides. I've been still throwing a little dive and rise. I'm sure that's fine and good for sure, that bite. But mainly swimming dogs, paddle tails, Medusas, and then glide baits. Those have been kind of the key on, honestly, especially glides. Glides have probably had the most action most of the fall. And that was just with when I was fishing with Clayton. He had some action on one of Nick Amrose's glide baits, the Hammer Customs Phil glide, and that's what got every fish actually to the boat. The one caught was on a swimming dog, but there was one that nudged the glide. So yeah, definitely be throwing those out there. And yeah, I think that's it for the update on the bite. I don't know how many of you are going out yet, but still got a lot of time. I guess that's the one nice part about the warmer weather right now, the silver lining there.
Yeah, it feels like everything's just kind of shifted back a month.
Yeah,
October's the new
basically,
September. November's the new October.
I mean, dude, fish are still shallow. Like, they're up on break lines. They're not on, I mean, there's definitely fish I've noticed coming off of like where the brake line meets, the basin, fish are 100% there, but there are fish in the weeds and there's bait in the weeds and fish are coming. I mean, it was a deep, clear system today, and that fish was in 10 feet of water on some grass,
I mean, when I
sitting up
fished
there.
Tonka on Friday, we were like all the fish we moved were relatively shallow, and there's no reason why they shouldn't be. I mean, every time I'd get weeds, I was throwing rubber, and you'd pull the weeds up and they'd be neon green. So it's like,
Yep.
I don't, I mean, until you stop seeing that, I don't know. I mean, I guess
The one other thing that I've seen is if you know where cribs are on the lake you're fishing, just go fish them. It's been almost like clockwork. You get to a crib and you're just like looking at your watch, looking at your electronics, like, all right, when are you gonna come out of that crib, buddy?
Yeah.
One of you, you're one of these clusters, like it's gonna have. I can almost guarantee a muskie out of the cribs. Will it bite? I don't know. Gotta get your
Probably
time in. Gotta get your timing down on that
Nah.
one.
Nah, thing ain't
Right? What is a muskie? Forgot what they look
Yeah.
like.
Might be able
I
to get like a Christmas Day troll in this year, the way things are going.
Can't wait.
Oh, we got a late November weekend. We still got potentially on the books here, so.
Potential.
Yeah, Brian's out.
He don't like the
Potential.
cold. He's kind of a soft hands type of guy.
Yeah.
We've already
No,
talked about this though, but
yeah.
I got those waterproof gloves this year. Those things were pretty solid for me a couple weekends ago.
You bought them, you gotta use
Yeah.
them.
Yeah, and you left them up here too.
Oh, for real?
Yeah, you must really love them. You
That's
kind
what I
of
forgot.
It's always something.
I like
All
triple
right.
check this time and
All
yeah,
right,
so I
Gus.
forget.
Let's put a bow on this one.
One thing here, and I'm gonna leave it here at the end, and also gonna leave it just on the podcast. I'm gonna think of this on the fly for one of the parts of this, but not, I mean, not trying to time this up anything with having Kevin on at the same time, but the Muskies on Tap hats are on the website when this comes out, and I'm serious about this, and I'm not going to say nothing on socials. So those who actually listen to the end of the podcast get first dibs. I'm going to keep that live, and then also not going to say anything through the weekend. So Thursday when this comes out, through I'll just say Sunday night at like 10 p.m. or something. I'll run a promo code for free shipping, over $30. So all you got to do is put a hat in the cart and a sticker. And free shipping. I'll just do let's do MOT1, Mott 1. And if that for some reason doesn't work, just send me a message. I'll have a promo
If it doesn't
code.
work, that's too damn
So
bad. Yeah, then
and we'll
send.
pass it along to our compliance.
Yeah, send yeah. So, yeah, send your complaints into Muskies on Tap Instagram page.
And then I'll pass them all along to Brian's personal
Our
Instagram, and
HR
they'll get dealt
department.
with there.
Yeah, the HR. God, Brian, you're HR too? Man, you got
Yeah.
a lot of
I usually
roles
just hand
here.
out sorry buds to people, but
Yeah.
hopefully
He
that'll work.
wears a lot of different hats in the company. He's kind of a one tool fits all type of guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyways, you can find the hats on www.sugsfishing.com, SUGS fishing. Muskies on Tap Instagram, Suggs Fishing Instagram. Add me as a friend on Facebook, Gus Manti. Suggs Fishing Guide Service is on there as well.
Unless he's on tap Facebook.
Muskies on Tap Facebook. That's right. We got one.
We're gonna post more on that, I swear.
We can't. We swear.
I will. Once
We figured it
what
out finally to like get it
Yeah.
to transfer, mingle, whatever meta, however these work these days. But when we post on Instagram, it goes on Facebook now because there's a lot of people out there that still don't have Instagrams, or they only have one or the other. So trying to reach a little bit
Yeah.
more of the muskie community there.
Now that fishing season's winding down, the content season will get a little bit more
Oh
active,
yeah.
a little more
Yeah.
active, some
And
stuff. So,
even should start soon now that
whoa, whoa, whoa.
daylight's I was just saying daylight savings happened, so I mean unless I get up like really early in the morning, but you know, it's dark by 5, coming home by 5:30.
You talking
A lot of
content
time.
season as fishing winds down as in a video? We getting a video?
Just some Instagram reels and Facebook reels and
Might be a video.
video. I'd like to put together the PMTT this year. That would be a good one to show. Max and I have a bunch of content from that. Probably either like the opener or Muskie Bender weekend. We have a ton of videos from that.
Yeah.
Otherwise, the rest is just kind of miscellaneous clips here and there. I got a bunch of clips with clients. There's a lot of times this year I unfortunately did not bring my hat cam on some awesome days, but is what it is, you know.
Yeah, whatever. It's fine. We got plenty of cool videos to someday release, so. All right. Well, fellas, it was a pleasure this evening. When this comes out, maybe we'll know who the next president is. Who knows?
Who knows how long that takes? How long does it even take? I swear, no, 4 years ago is like
Which
took like a couple days.
depends how many votes come in at 3 a.m. that they got to recount.
Cripes.
But anyway, all right, everybody, thank you for listening to this week's episode of Muskies on Tap. Shout out to Kevin Conger for coming on. Incredible guy to talk to, full of stories. Make sure to go check out his Headwaters Hat Co. But don't forget about the Muskies on Tap Hat Co. We got a new promo if you listen to this far on the pod. Make sure to check it out. Use the code. Go back and find it. I don't remember what it was. And guys,
Hot
it's not too early.
one.
If you don't need a hat anymore, it's stocking stuffer season right around the corner. So make sure to buy a hat from each company and fill those stockings up. Peace.
MOT1.
Peace.
Hot one. Peace.